more than the sum of his parts. 21 August 2058. They say I am to keep a detailed record of my feelings, my perceptions, as I grow accustomed to the new parts. To that end, they gave me an apparatus that blind people use for writing, like a tablet with guide wires. It is somewhat awkward, but a recorder would be useless, since I will not have a mouth for some time, and I can't type blind with only one hand. Woke up free from pain. Interesting. Surprising to find that it has only been 5 days since the accident. For the record, I am, or was, Dr. Wilson Cheatham, Senior Engineer, Quality Control for U.S. Steel's Skyfax Station, a high-orbit facility that produces foam steel and vapor deposition materials for use in the cislunar community. But if you are reading this, you must know all that. 5 days ago, I was inspecting the aluminum deposition facility and had a bad accident. There was a glitch in my jet seat controls, and I flew suddenly straight into the wide beam of charged aluminum vapor. Very hot. They turned it off in a second, but there was still plenty of time for the beam to breach the suit and thoroughly roast three-quarters of my body. Apparently, there was a rescue bubble right there. I was unconscious, of course. They tell me that my heart stopped with the shock, but they managed to save me. My left leg and arm are gone, as is my face. I have no lower jaw, nose, or external ears. I can hear after a fashion, though, and will have eyes in a week or so. They claim they will craft for me testicles and a penis. I must be pumped full of mood drugs. I feel too calm. If I were myself, whatever fraction of myself is left, perhaps I would resist the insult of being turned into a sexless half-machine. Ah, well, this will be a machine that can turn itself off. 22 August 2058. For many days, there was only sleep or pain. This was in the weightless ward at Mercy. They stripped the dead skin off me bit by bit. There are limits to anesthesia, unfortunately. I tried to scream, but found I had no vocal cords. They finally decided not to try to salvage the arm and leg, which saved some pain. When I was able to listen, they explained that U.S. Steel valued my services so much that they were willing to underwrite a state-of-the-art cyborg transformation. Half the cost will be absorbed by Interface Biotech on the moon. Everybody will deduct me from their taxes. This, then, is the catalog. First, new arm and leg. That's fairly standard. I once worked with a woman who had two cyborg arms. It took weeks before I could look at her without feeling pity and revulsion. Then they will attempt to build me a working jaw and mouth, which has been done only rarely and imperfectly, and rebuild the trachea, vocal cords, esophagus. I will be able to speak and drink, though except for certain soft foods I won't eat in a normal way. Salivary glands are beyond their art. No mucous membranes of any kind. A drastic cure for my chronic sinusitis. Surprisingly to me, at least, the reconstruction of a penis is a fairly straightforward procedure, for which they've had lots of practice. Men are forever sticking them into places where they don't belong. They are particularly excited about my case because of the challenge in restoring sensation as well as function. The prostate is intact, and they seem confident that they can hook up the complicated plumbing involved in ejaculation. Restoring the ability to urinate is trivially easy, they say. The biotechnician in charge of the urogenital phase of the project talked at me for more than an hour, going into unnecessarily grisly detail. It seems that this replacement was done occasionally, even before they had any kind of mechanical substitute, by sawing off a short rib and transplanting it, covering it with a skin graft from elsewhere on the body. The recipient thus was blessed with a permanent erection. Unfortunately, rather strange-looking, and short on sensation. My own prosthesis will look very much like the real, shall we say, thing, and new developments in tractor field mechanics and bionic interfacing should give it realistic response patterns. I don't know how to feel about all this. I wish they would leave my blood chemistry alone so I could have some honest grief or horror, whatever, instead of this placid waiting. 4 September 2058. Out cold for 13 days, and I wake up with eyes. The arm and leg are in place, but not powered up yet. I wonder what the eyes look like. They won't give me a mirror until I have a face. They feel like wet glass. Very fancy eyes. I have a box with two dials that I can use to override the default mode, that is, the ability to see only normally. One of them gives me conscious control over pupil dilation so I can see in almost total darkness or, if for some reason I wanted to, look directly at the sun without discomfort. The other changes the frequency response so I can see either in the infrared or the ultraviolet. This hospital room looks pretty much the same in ultraviolet, but in infrared it takes on a whole new aspect. Most of the room's illumination, then, comes from bright bars on the walls, radiant heating. My real arm shows a pulsing tracery of arteries and veins. The other is, of course, not visible except by reflection, and is dark blue. Later. Strange, I didn't realize I was on the moon. I thought it was a low-gravity ward in Mercy. While I was sleeping, they sent me down to biotech. Should have figured that out. 5 September 2058. They turned on the social arm and leg and began patterning exercises. I am told to think of a certain movement and do its mirror image with my right arm or leg while attempting to execute it with my left. The trainer helps the cyborg unit along, which generates something like pain, though actually it doesn't resemble any real muscular ache. Maybe it's the way circuits feel when they're overloaded. By the end of the session, I was able to make a fist without help, though there is hardly enough grip to hold a pencil. I can't raise the leg yet, but can make the toes move. They removed some of the bandages today, from shoulder to hip, and the test tube skin looks much more real than I had prepared myself for. Hairless and somewhat glossy, but the color match is perfect. In infrared, it looks quite different, more uniform in color than the real side. I suppose that's because it hasn't aged 40 years. While putting me through my paces, the technician waxed rhapsodic about how good this arm is going to be. This set of arms, actually. I'm exercising with the social one, which looks much more convincing than the ones my co-worker displayed 10 years ago. No doubt more a matter of money than of advancing technology. The working arm, which I haven't seen yet, will be all metal, capable of being worn on the outside of a spacesuit. Besides having the two arms, I'll be able to interface with various Waldos, tailored to specific functions. I am fortunately more ambidextrous than the average person. I broke my right wrist in the second grade and kept re-breaking it through the third, and so learned to write with both hands. All my life, I have been able to print more clearly with the left. They claim to be cutting down on my medication. If that's the truth, I seem to be adjusting fairly well. Then again, I have nothing in my past experience to use as a basis for comparison. Perhaps this calmness is only a mask for hysteria. 6 September 2058. Today I was able to tie a simple knot. I can lightly sketch out the letters of the alphabet. A large and childish scrawl, but recognizably my own. I've begun walking after a fashion, supporting myself between parallel bars. The lack of hand strength is a neural problem, not a muscular one. When rigid, the arm and leg are as strong as metal crutches. As I practice, it's amusing to watch the reactions of people who walk into the room. People who aren't paid to mask their horror at being studied by two cold lenses embedded in a swath of bandages formed over a shape that is not a head. Tomorrow they start building my face. I will be essentially unconscious for more than a week. The limb patterning will continue as I sleep, they say. 14 September 2058. When I was a child, my mother, always careful to have me do normal things, dressed me in costume each Halloween and escorted me around the high-rise so I could beg for candy I did not want and money I did not need. On one occasion, I had to wear the mask of a child star then popular on the Cube, a tightly fitting plastic affair that covered the entire head, squeezing my pudgy features into something more in line with some platonic ideal of childish beauty. That was my last Halloween. I embarrassed her. This face is like that. It is undeniably my face, but the skin is taut and unresponsive. Any attempt at expression produces a grimace. I have almost normal grip in the hand now, though it is still clumsy. As they hoped, the sensory feedback from the fingertips and palms seems to be more finely tuned than in my good hand. Tracing my new forefinger across my right wrist, I can sense the individual pores. And there is a marked temperature gradient as I pass over tendon or vein. And yet the hand and arm will eventually be capable of superhuman strength. Touching my new face, I do not feel pores. They have improved on nature in the business of heat exchange. 22 September 2058. Another week of sleep while they installed the new plumbing. When the anesthetic wore off, I felt a definite something. Not pain, but neither was it the normal somatic heft of genitalia. Everything was bedded in gauze and bandaged, though, and catheterized, so it would feel strange even to a normal person. Later, an aide came in and gingerly snipped away the bandages. He blushed. I don't think fondling was in his job description. When the catheter came out, there was a small sting of pain and relief. It's not much of a copy. To reconstruct the face, they could consult hundreds of pictures and cubes. But it had never occurred to me that one day it might be useful to have a gallery of pictures of my private parts in various stages of repose. The technicians had approached the problem by bringing me a stack of photos culled from urological texts and pornography, and having me sort through them as to closeness of fit. It was not a task for which I was well trained, by experience or disposition. Strange as it may seem in this age of unfettered hedonism, I haven't seen another man naked, let alone rampant, since leaving high school 25 years ago. I was stationed on Farside for 18 months and never went near a sex bar, preferring an audience of one. Even if I had to hire her, as was usually the case. So this one is rather longer and thicker than its predecessor. Would all men unconsciously exaggerate? And has only approximately the same aspect when erect. A young man's rakish angle. Distasteful, but necessary to write about the matter of masturbation. At first it didn't work. With my right hand it felt like holding another man, which I have never had any desire to do. With the new hand, though, the process proceeded in the normal way, though I must admit to a voyeuristic aspect. The sensations were extremely acute. Ejaculation more forceful than I can remember from youth. It makes me wonder. In a book I recently read about brain chemistry, the author made a major point of the notion that it's a mistake to completely equate mind with brain. The brain, he said, is in a way only the thickest and most complex segment of the nervous system. It coordinates our consciousness, but the actual mind suffuses through the body in a network of ganglia. In fact, he used sexuality as an example. When a man ruefully observes that his penis has a mind of its own, he is stating part of a larger truth. But I, in fact, do have actual brains embedded in my new parts. The biochips that process sensory data coming in and action commands going back. Are these brains part of my consciousness, the way the rest of my nervous system is? The masturbation experience indicates they might be in business for themselves. This is premature speculation, so to speak. We'll see how it feels when I move into a more complex environment where I'm not so self-absorbed. 23 September 2058. During the night, something evidently clicked. I woke up this morning with full strength in my cyborg limbs. One rail of the bed was twisted out of shape where I must have unconsciously gripped it. I bent it back quite easily. Some obscure impulse makes me want to keep this talent secret for the time being. The technicians thought I would be able to exert 3 or 4 times the normal person's grip. This is obviously much more than that. But why keep it a secret? I don't know. Eventually they will read this diary and I will stand exposed. There's no harm in that, though. This is supposed to be a record of my psychological adjustment or maladjustment. Let them tell me why I've done it. Later. The techs were astonished, ecstatic. I demonstrated a pull of 90 kilograms. I know if I'd actually given it a good yank, I could have pulled the stress machine out of the wall. I'll give them 110 tomorrow and inch my way up to 125. Obviously, I must be careful with force vectors. If I put too much stress on the normal parts of my body, I could do permanent injury. With my metal fist, I could certainly punch a hole through an airlock door, but it would probably tear the prosthesis out of its socket. Newton's laws still apply. Other laws will have to be rewritten. 24 September, 2058. I got to work out with three Waldos today. A fantastic experience. The first one was a disembodied hand and arm attached to a stand, the setup they use to train normal people in the use of Waldos. The difference is that I don't need a Waldo sleeve to imperfectly transmit my wishes to the mechanical double. I can plug into it directly. I've been using Waldos in my work ever since graduate school, but it was never anything like this. Inside the Waldo sleeve, you get a clumsy kind of feedback from striated pressure field generators embedded in the plastic. With my setup, the feedback is exactly the kind a normal person feels when he touches an object, but much more sensitive. The first time they asked me to pick up an egg, I tossed it up and caught it. No great feat of coordination in lunar gravity, admittedly, but I could have done it as easily in Earth normal. The next Waldo was a large earth mover that Western Mining uses over at Grimaldi Station. That was interesting, not only because of its size, but because of the slight communications lag. Grimaldi is only a few dozens of kilometers away, but there aren't enough unused data channels between here and there for me to use the landline to communicate with the earth mover hand. I had to relay via ComSat, so there was about a 10th-second delay between the thought and the action. It was a fine feeling of power, but a little confusing. I would cup my hand and scoop downward, and then a split second too late would feel the resistance of the regolith, and then casually hold in my palm several tons of rock and dirt. People standing around watching. With a flick of my wrist, I could have buried them. Instead, I dutifully dumped it on the belt to the converter. But the Waldo that most fascinated me was the Micro. It had been in use for only a few months. I had heard of it, but hadn't had a chance to see it in action. It is a fully articulated hand, barely a tenth of a millimeter long. I used it in conjunction with a low-power scanning electron microscope, moving around on the surface of a microcircuit. At that magnification, it looked like a hand on a long stick wandering through the corridors of a building whose walls varied from rough stucco to brushed metal to blistered gray paint, all laced over with thick cables of gold. When necessary, I could bring in another hand, manipulated by my right from inside a Waldo sleeve, to help with simple carpenter and machinist tasks that in the real world translated into fundamental changes in the quantum electrodynamic properties of the circuit. This was the real power. Not crushing metal tubes or lifting tons of rock, but pushing electrons around to do my bidding. My first doctorate was in electrical engineering. In a sudden epiphany, I realized that I am the first actual electrical engineer in history. After 2 hours, they made me stop, said I was showing signs of strain. They put me in a wheelchair, and I did fall asleep on the way back to my room, dreaming dreams of microcosmic and infinite power. 25 September 2058. The metal arm. I expected it to feel fundamentally different from the social one. But of course it doesn't, most of the time. Circuits are circuits. The difference comes under conditions of extreme exertion. The soft hand gives me signals like pain if I come close to the level of stress that would harm the flesh-like material. With the metal hand, I can rip off a chunk of steel plate a centimeter thick and feel nothing beyond muscular strain. If I had two of them, I could work marvels. The mechanical leg is not so gifted. It has governors to restrict its strength and range of motion to that of a normal leg, which is reasonable. Even a normal person finds himself brushing the ceiling occasionally in lunar gravity. I could stand up sharply and find myself with a concussion or worse. I like the metal arm, though. When I'm stronger, ha! They say they'll let me go outside and try it with a spacesuit. Throw something over the horizon. Starting today, I'm easing back into a semblance of normal life. I'll be staying at Biotech for another 6 or 8 weeks, but I'm patched into my SkyFac office and have started clearing out the backlog of paperwork. 2 hours in the morning and 2 in the afternoon. It's diverting, but I have to admit my heart isn't really in it. Rather be playing with the micro. Have booked 3 hours on it tomorrow. 26 September 2058. They threaded an optical fiber through the micro's little finger so I can watch its progress on a screen without being limited to the field of an electron microscope. The picture is fuzzy while the Waldo is in motion, but if I hold it still for a few seconds, the computer assist builds up quite a sharp image. I used it to roam all over my right arm and hand, which was fascinating. Hair's a tangle of stiff black stalks, the pores small damp craters, and everywhere the evidence of the skin's slow death. Translucent sheaths of desquamated cells. I've taken to wearing the metal arm rather than the social one. People's stares don't bother me. The metal one will be more useful in my actual work, and I want to get as much practice as possible. There is also an undeniable feeling of power. 27 September 2058. Today I went outside. It was clumsy getting around at first. For the past 11 years, I've used a suit only in zero-G, so all my reflexes are wrong. Still, not much serious can go wrong at a sixth of a G. It was exhilarating, but at the same time frustrating, since I couldn't reveal all my strength. I did almost overdo it once, starting to tip over a large boulder. Before it tipped, I realized that my left boot had crunched through about 10 centimeters of regolith, in reaction to the amount of force I was applying. So I backed off and discreetly shuffled my foot to fill the telltale hole. I could indeed throw a rock over the horizon. With a sling, I might be able to put a small one into orbit. Rent myself out as a lunar launching facility. Later. Most interesting. A pretty nurse who has been on this project since the beginning came into my room after dinner and proposed the obvious experiment. It was wildly successful. Although my new body starts out with the normal pattern of excitation, plateau, orgasm, the resemblance stops there. I have no refractory period. The process of erection is completely under conscious control. This could make me the most popular man on the moon. The artificial skin of the penis is as sensitive to tactile differentiation as that of the cyborg fingers. Suddenly, I know more about a woman's internal topography than any man who ever lived. More than any woman. I think tomorrow I'll take a trip to Farside. 28 September 2058. Farside has 9 sex bars. I read the guidebook descriptions and then asked a few locals for their recommendations and wound up going to a place cleverly called the Juice Bar. In fact, the name was not just an expression of coy eroticism. They served nothing but fruit and juices there, most of them fantastically expensive earth imports. I spent a day's pay on a glass of pear nectar and sought out the most attractive woman in the room. That in itself was a mistake. I was not physically attractive even before the accident, and the mechanics have faithfully restored my coarse features and slight paunch. I was rebuffed. So I went to the opposite extreme and looked for the plainest woman. That would be a better test anyway. Before the accident, I always demanded and paid for physical perfection. If I could duplicate the performance of last night with a woman to whom I was not sexually attracted, and do it in public, with no pressure from having gone without, then my independence from the autonomic nervous system would be proven beyond doubt. Second mistake. I was never good at small talk, and when I located my paragon of plainness, I began talking about the accident and the singular talent that had resulted from it. She suddenly remembered an appointment elsewhere. I was not so open with the next woman, also plain. She asked whether there was something wrong with my face, and I told her half of the truth. She was sweetly sympathetic, motherly, which did not endear her to me. It did make her a good subject for the experiment. We left the socializing section of the bar and went back to the so-called love room. There was an acrid quality to the air that I suppose was compounded of incense and sweat, but of course my dry nose was not capable of identifying actual smells. For the first time, I was grateful for that disability. The place probably had the aroma of a well-used locker room, plus pheromones. Under the muted lights, red and blue as well as white, more than a dozen couples were engaged more or less actively in various aspects of amorous behavior. A few were frankly staring at others, but most were either absorbed with their own affairs or furtive in their voyeurism. Most of them were on the floor, which was a warm, soft mat, but some were using tables and chairs in fairly ingenious ways. Several of the permutations would no doubt have been impossible or dangerous in Earth's gravity. We undressed, and she complimented me on my evident spryness. A nearby spectator made a jealous observation. Her own body was rather flaccid, doughy, and under previous circumstances I doubt that I would have been able to maintain enthusiasm. There was no problem, however. In fact, I rather enjoyed it. She required very little foreplay, and I was soon repeating the odd sensation of hypersensitized exploration. Gynecological spelunking. She was quite voluble in her pleasure, and although she lasted less than an hour, we did attract a certain amount of attention. When she, panting, regretfully declined further exercise, a woman who had been watching, a rather attractive young blonde, offered to share her various openings. I obliged her for a while. Although the well was dry, the pump handle was unaffected. During that performance, I became aware that the pleasure involved was not a sexual one in any normal sense. Sensual, yes, in the way that a fine meal is a sensual experience, but with a remote subtlety that I find difficult to describe. Perhaps there is a relation to Epicurism that is more than metaphorical. Since I can no longer taste food, a large area of my brain is available for the evaluation of other experience. It may be that the brain is reorganizing itself in order to take fullest advantage of my new abilities. By the time the blonde's energy began to flag, several other women had taken an interest in my satyriasis. I resisted the temptation to find what this organ's limit was, if indeed a limit exists. My back ached and the right knee was protesting, so I threw the mental switch and deflated. I left with a minimum of socializing. The first woman insisted on buying me something at the bar. I opted for a banana. 29 September 2058. Now that I have eyes and both hands, there's no reason to scratch this diary out with a pen. So I'm entering it into the computer. But I'm keeping two versions. I recopied everything up to this point and then went back and edited the version that I will show to Biotech. It's very polite and will remain so. For instance, it does not contain the following. After writing last night's entry, I found myself still full of energy, and so I decided to put into action a plan that has been forming in my mind. About 2 a.m, I went downstairs and broke into the Waldo lab. The entrance is protected by a 5-digit combination lock, but of course that was no obstacle. My hypersensitive fingers could feel the tumblers rattling into place. I got the micro-Waldo set up and then detached my leg. I guided the Waldo through the leg circuitry and easily disabled the governors. The whole operation took less than 20 minutes. I did have to use a certain amount of care walking at first. There was a tendency to rise into the air or to limpingly overcompensate. It was under control by the time I got back to my room, so once more they proved to have been mistaken as to the limits of my abilities. Testing the strength of the leg with a half-hearted kick, I put a deep dent in the metal wall at the rear of my closet. I'll have to wait until I can be outside, alone, to see what full force can do. A comparison kick with my flesh leg left no dent, but did hurt my great toe. 30 September 2058. It occurs to me that I feel better about my body than I have in the past 20 years. Who wouldn't? Literally, eternal youth in these new limbs and organs. If a part shows signs of wear, it can simply be replaced. I was angry at the biotech evaluation board this morning when I simply inquired as to the practicality of replacing the right arm and leg as well. All but one were horrified. One was amused. I will remember him. I think the fools are going to order me to leave Nearside in a day or two and go back to Mercy for psychiatric help. I will leave when I want to, on my own terms. 1 October 2058. This is being voice recorded in the Environmental Control Center at Nearside. It is 10:32. They have less than 90 minutes to accede to my demands. Let me backtrack. After writing last night's entry, I felt a sudden access of sexual desire. I took the shuttle to Farside and went back to the juice bar. The plain woman from the previous night was waiting, hoping that I would show up. She was delighted when I suggested that we save money, and whatever residue of modesty we had left, by keeping ourselves to one another back at my room. I didn't mean to murder her. That was not in my mind at all. But I suppose in my passion or abandon, I carelessly propped my strong leg against the wall and then thrust with too much strength. At any rate, there was a snap and a tearing sound. She gave a small cry, and the lower half of my body was suddenly awash in blood. I had snapped her spine, and evidently at the same time caused considerable internal damage. She must have lost consciousness very quickly, though her heart did not stop beating for nearly a minute. Disposing of the body was no great problem, conceptually. In the laundry room, I found a bag large enough to hold her comfortably. Then I went back to the room and put her and the sheet she had besmirched into the bag. Getting her to the recycler would have been a problem if it had been a normal hour. She looked like nothing so much as a body in a laundry bag. Fortunately, the corridor was deserted. The lock on the recycler room was child's play. The furnace door was a problem, though. It was easy to unlock, but its effective diameter was only 25 centimeters. So I had to disassemble her. To save cleaning up, I did the job inside the laundry bag, which was clumsy, and made it difficult to see the fascinating process. I was so absorbed in watching that I didn't hear the door slide open. But the man who walked in made a slight gurgling sound, which somehow I did hear over the cracking of bones. I stepped over to him and killed him with one kick. At this point, I have to admit to a lapse in judgment. I relocked the door and went back to the chore at hand. After the woman was completely recycled, I repeated the process with the man, which was, incidentally, much easier. The female's layer of subcutaneous fat made disassembly of the torso a more slippery business. It really was wasted time, though I did spend part of the time thinking out the final touches of the plan I am now engaged upon. I might as well have left both bodies there on the floor. I had kicked the man with great force, enough to throw me to the ground in reaction and badly bruise my right hip, and had split him open from crotch to heart. This made a bad enough mess, even if he hadn't compounded the problem by striking the ceiling. I would never be able to clean that up, and it's not the sort of thing that would escape notice for long. At any rate, it was only 20 minutes wasted, and I gained more time than that by disabling the recycler room lock. I cleaned up, changed clothes, stopped by the Waldo lab for a few minutes, and then took the slidewalk to the Environmental Control Center. There was only one young man on duty at the ECC at that hour. I exchanged a few pleasantries with him and then punched him in the heart, softly enough not to make a mess. I put his body where it wouldn't distract me and then attended to the problem of the door. There's no actual door on the ECC, but there is an emergency wall that slides into place if there's a drop in pressure. I typed up a test program simulating an emergency, and the wall obeyed. Then I walked over and twisted a few flanges around. Nobody would be able to get into the center with anything short of a cutting torch. Sitting was uncomfortable with the bruised hip. but I managed to ease into the console and spend an hour or so studying logic and wiring diagrams. Then I popped off an access plate and moved the micro-Waldo down the corridors of electronic thought. The intercom began buzzing incessantly, but I didn't let it interfere with my concentration. Nearside is protected from meteorite strike, or, far more likely, structural failure, by a series of 128 bulkheads that, like the emergency wall here, can slide into place and isolate any area where there's a pressure drop. It's done automatically, of course, but can also be controlled from here. What I did, in essence, was to tell each bulkhead that it was under repair and should not close under any circumstance. Then I moved the Waldo over to the circuits that control the city's 8 airlocks. With some rather elegant microsurgery, I transferred control of all 8 solely to the pressure switch I now hold in my left hand. It is a negative pressure button, a dead man's switch taken from a power saw. So long as I hold it down, the inner doors of the airlocks will remain locked. If I let go, they will all iris open. The outer doors are already open, as are the ones that connect the airlock chambers to the suiting-up rooms. No one will be able to make it to a spacesuit in time. Within 30 seconds, every corridor will be full of vacuum. People behind airtight doors may choose between slow asphyxiation and explosive decompression. My initial plan had been to wire the dead man switch to my pulse, which would free my good hand and allow me to sleep. That will have to wait. The wiring completed, I turned on the intercom and announced that I would speak to the coordinator and no one else. When I finally got to talk to him, I told him what I had done and invited him to verify it. That didn't take long. Then I presented my demands. Surgery to replace the rest of my limbs, of course. The surgery would have to be done while I was conscious. A heartbeat dead man switch could be subverted by a heart machine. And it would have to be done here, so that I could be assured that nobody fooled with my circuit changes. The doctors were called in, and they objected that such profound surgery couldn't be done under local anesthetic. I knew they were lying, of course. Amputation was a fairly routine procedure even before anesthetics were invented. Yes, but I would faint, they said. I told them that I would not. And at any rate, I was willing to take the chance, and no one else had any choice in the matter. I have not yet mentioned that the ultimate totality of my plan involves replacing all my internal organs as well as all of the limbs, or at least those organs whose failure could cause untimely death. I will be a true cyborg, then, a human brain in an artificial body, with the prospect of thousands of years of life. With a few decades or centuries of research, I could even do something about the brain's shortcomings. I would wind up interface to EarthNet, with all of human knowledge at my disposal, and with my faculties for logic and memory no longer fettered by the slow pace of electrochemical synapse. A psychiatrist talking from Earth tried to convince me of the error of my ways. He said that the dreadful trauma had obviously unhinged me, and the cyborg augmentation, far from effecting a cure, had made my mental derangement worse. He demonstrated, at least to his own satisfaction, that my behavior followed some classical pattern of madness. All this had been taken into consideration, he said, and if I were to give myself up, I would be forgiven my crimes and manumitted into the loving arms of the psychiatric establishment. I did take time to explain the fundamental errors in his way of thinking. He felt that I had quite literally lost my identity by losing my face and genitalia, and that I was at bottom a good person whose essential humanity had been perverted by physical and existential estrangement. Totally wrong. By his terms, what I actually am is an evil person whose true nature was revealed to himself by the lucky accident that released him from existential propinquity with the common herd. And evil is the accurate word, not maladjusted or amoral or even criminal. I am as evil by human standards as a human is evil by the standards of an animal raised for food, and the analogy is accurate. I will sacrifice humans, not only for my survival, but for comfort, curiosity, or entertainment. I will allow to live anyone who doesn't bother me and reward generously those who help. Now they have only 40 minutes. They know I am... End of recording. 25 September, 2058. Excerpt from summary report. I am Dr. Henry Janofsky, head of the surgical team that worked on the ill-fated cyborg augmentation of Dr. Wilson Cheatham. We were fortunate that Dr. Cheatham's insanity did interfere with his normally painstaking, precise nature. If he had spent more time in preparation, I have no doubt that he would have put us in a very difficult fix. He should have realized that the protecting wall that shut him off from the rest of Nearside was made of steel, an excellent conductor of electricity. If he had insulated himself behind a good dielectric, he could have escaped his fate. Cheatham's Waldo was a marvelous instrument, but basically it was only a pseudo-intelligent servo mechanism that obeyed well-defined radio frequency commands. All we had to do was override the signals that were coming from his own nervous system. We hooked a powerful amplifier up to the steel wall, making it, in effect, a huge radio transmitter. To generate the signal we wanted amplified, I had a technician put on a Waldo sleeve that was holding a box similar to Cheatham's dead man switch. We wired the hand closed, turned up the power, and had the technician strike himself on the chin as hard as he could. The technician struck himself so hard, he blacked out for a few seconds. Cheatham's resonant action, perhaps 100 times more powerful, drove the bones of his chin up through the top of his skull. Fortunately, the expensive arm itself was not damaged. It is not evil or insane by itself, of course, which I shall prove. The experiments will continue, though of course we will be more selective as to subjects. It seems obvious in retrospect that we should not use as subjects people who have gone through the kind of trauma the Cheatham suffered. We must use willing volunteers, such as myself. I am not young, and weakness and an occasional tremor in my hands limit the amount of surgery I can do, much less than my knowledge would allow or my nature desire. My failing left arm I shall have replaced with Cheatham's mechanical marvel, and I will go through training similar to his, but for the good of humanity, not for ill. What miracles I will perform with the knife.